Blog Talk Radio.
Embraces the changes of the world and within, bringing you back to who you really are. I'm Anna East, and thank you for being here too. Welcome back to Here I Am. The music you just heard is called What Do You See by Daniel Deutschel, if I pronounce that correctly. If you listen through the whole episode, I'll play the rest of the song at the end. And in my opinion, the end of the song is the best. So each week I do choose new music to feature. And if you've listened before, you'll know that if you'd like to submit your own music to be featured in this podcast, I would love to hear it. So here we are, episode 12. And what are we talking about today? Well, it is a long-awaited topic that I've actually had on my list ever since I started this podcast, but I just hadn't found the right person to talk to until today. And so I'm very, very excited. And what is the thing that we're talking about? Well, you probably know if you're looking at the podcast itself, but it's permaculture. Woo! And if you've never heard of permaculture before, I'll give you an idea of what it is with a very official internet definition. Wikipedia says, permaculture is a set of design principles centered on whole systems thinking, simulating or directly utilizing the patterns and resilient features observed in natural ecosystems. It uses these principles in a growing number of fields from regenerative agriculture, rewilding, and community resilience. Now, that might seem very wordy, like for me, since I couldn't pronounce those words, if you've never heard the concept before, but don't worry, we'll break it down for you. We, meaning my guest, Nick and I. I personally became very interested in it when I learned it was a more holistic, sustainable way of growing food that works with nature instead of against it. And I first heard of the concept years ago when a friend sent me an article about a forest garden, which is a certain design, I guess you could say, of permaculture, which is basically like a garden in the design of a forest where it's mostly all edible and it takes care of itself like an untouched forest would through the placement of the plants and everything. It doesn't need pesticides and it doesn't strip the soil. And that's, I've got the very, you know, rudimentary basic knowledge of that sort of thing. But I wanted to learn, so I started to take some workshops. And then I to a place without a yard, and then I moved and I moved and I moved, and I haven't had a backyard or land to grow a garden since. But someday I plan on having a large property where I can implement permaculture into my life and help my local community out with it too. And I am very much a rookie right now when it comes to this stuff, and I figured if I'm going to learn how to save the world through permaculture, I needed to start talking to somebody who knows what they're talking about, preferably a professional. And today we have a guest that is just that. I coincidentally met, quote unquote, met Nick on the Instagram and realized after coming across his page that, duh, this is the human I need to be speaking to. So who is this Perma Nick? Nick is a nature lover and permaculture designer on a quest to help solve the climate crisis. Permanic, he is supporting people to live more sustainable and regenerative, I'll get that word down, lives. Curiosity, passion for the environment are constantly driving him to find new and creative solutions to today's problems. As a passionate educator, he wants to inspire the world to explore different ways of living and caring for our planet. So, without further ado, here is Nick. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. So, Nick, tell everybody where you're calling in from right now.
Yeah, I'm sitting at the moment in Hamburg in northern Germany at my parents' house that I'm just visiting at the moment again.
Nice. And do you have access to any nature where you are right now?
Luckily, yes. We have a garden and we're just on the outskirts of Hamburg, so we also have a lot of fields where I spent most of my younger days outside roaming the fields.
That's cool. Would you say that's like kind of where, you know, your connection to nature kind of started, was there?
I'm not sure, but it must have been a part. So luckily, when I grew up, phones weren't a thing yet, and we still spend our days in the garden and not really on our phones. And yeah, I just always loved being outside, and I just loved the environment. And yeah, I can't say if it was our garden or the world as a whole, but yeah, there's definitely a love that started early on.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool. I feel like right now everyone's kind of having the experience of, you know, we do have the technology, but people are slowing down enough to finally pay attention to their gardens or their yards or any natural spaces that they're near, since they haven't got as much access to everything else, you know, right now, which is nice.
100%.
Yeah. So how would you explain permaculture to somebody who's never heard of it before?
There's the definition from Wikipedia. I also read that a few times. And I think, permaculture is one of these things. There's probably as many definitions as there are people involved with permaculture. Mm-hmm. And there's one of my absolute mentors and heroes in permaculture, Jeff Lawton. He had a really precise definition, and he defined permaculture as a way of fulfilling all of humanity's basic needs while regenerating the environment. And I think that's really the essence of it. So it's so much more than just gardening. So it's really everything we need as humans, from the side of food, but also community, looking out for the future. It's all these different things combined. But it's not just doing that. It's really giving us humans what we need, but also looking at nature and being part of nature. And that's what I think is so special about permaculture.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it definitely has a different respect and connection with nature than I think, you know, what agriculture does of right now. I think for me, I don't know for you, and since you are, again, the expert here, please correct me if I'm wrong, but modern day agricultural techniques tend to like strip the land, and they, you know, it's all about the product itself, but it doesn't actually take care of or replenish the land itself as well. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, when you started learning about permaculture and what it is now still, what is your opinion of the difference between the two, of modern agricultural techniques versus permaculture?
It's a very big difference. And I think it leads back a bit to the 70s when the kind of co-originator of permaculture, Bill Mollison, he also looked at the practices that were going on. So there's a lot of pesticide use, there's a lot of tillage. There are a lot of these practices that are quite damaging to the land, because when soil is tilled, so when we have a plow running through it, and afterwards it's basically naked soil, we have a lot of problems, because with wind, with rain, with all these influences, the valuable topsoil that has the nutrition that we need, it's just blown away, it's washed away, and with all the chemicals, we're basically poisoning everything that's left. And he was very frustrated, and he wanted to look at something that is not just there for the short run and not just there for efficient and easy profits, but he wanted something more permanent. And that's also where the word comes from. So it's permanent agriculture in the origin. And now it's kind of evolved into permanent culture as it grew as a field. And I think that's the main difference. In industrial agriculture, what we see a lot today, it's really focused on efficiency and large scale. So it's it's great because one person with a tractor can basically work on thousands of hectares and do everything as just one human. But that's not really what nature is designed to do, and that's also failing. Every year we're losing topsoil, and at some point that topsoil will be gone and we won't be able to grow food anymore. How long that will take is still a subject of debate. But in permaculture, we're trying to really look at nature. So we're trying to observe what happens in the natural ecosystems. How do natural ecosystems work? And they function over thousands of years. They are stable. And that is the whole idea of permaculture, that we want to recreate these kind of stable ecosystems that we don't need to put new kind of things, new inputs into every year, but we just create them once, and then they get stronger over time, and they're stable and permanent. And I think that is the very big difference. On the one hand, industrial agriculture needs immense inputs every year, and I think that's also part of the problem, because we have very powerful organizations. They are selling us fertilizers, seeds, all these things, and for them, it's the perfect business model to keep selling these inputs every year. And then on the other hand, we have stable ecosystems that we can also get food out of. On the other hand, that we set up once, and then, of course, we need to still work on them and maintain them. But it's much less input. And once they are really stable, you already mentioned the forest garden, these ecosystems, they just keep producing. And for us as humans and for the planet, that's great. For fertilizer and seed companies, that's maybe not so great.
Right. That's, I mean, geez, so much great information that you just said right there. The solution basically is what you were saying is that the soil can be created once, like you had described, and then it can continuously like take care of itself almost. And I think a lot of people, they're so used to the way of doing things, currently with, like you said, industrial agriculture, to think of it being done a different way, it feels like almost like, is it even possible? Like, how is it done? How do you create these systems?
It really depends. Yeah, but I'll try to give you a bit of an idea. So basically, one of the main things we always look at is context. So what kind of context are you in? Maybe some people just have a small garden. And then for them, there are techniques that are completely different to someone who says, oh, I have a few hundred hectares and I want to do something much bigger. But the general idea is always to look at, okay, what would work in a natural ecosystem? Let's take a forest, for example. So in a forest, we have different kind of layers. So we have things growing on the ground, in the ground. We have small bushes, smaller trees, larger trees on top. And these systems are stable because basically all the gaps, all the ecological niches, they're all filled. There's something growing in them. And then what we are trying to do as permaculture designers is to look at these systems that work in nature and then kind of look at, is there a plant that could fill the niche in the ecosystem, but it's a plant that has either some kind of benefit for us in terms of food or medicine or something else. And then we're kind of trying to recreate and facilitate nature in setting up these ecosystems that are full of plants that we actually want and that we can get a benefit from. And that really works on different kind of scales. So when you look at a normal vegetable bed with just annual plants that are just living for a few months, the problem is this is basically in nature, this is the starting point. So nature tries to then fill the gaps that are there. Naked soil is something that you will hardly ever see in nature because nature wants to heal kind of itself and fill these empty spaces with plants so that the soil can regenerate and be covered again. And those things that do these great services and that fill the soil and bring nutrition back, that's what many people call weeds. And that is one of the big things. Nature is just, it's called succession. So it's slowly, if there are enough nutrients, every piece of land will move towards the forest. And that's what nature just does. Nature becomes more full of life and full of biomass. And we are always trying to set it back many times by pulling out all these weeds and then nature will keep trying to get back to a healthy state. And if we keep fighting it, we can never win. But what we can do is we can basically overtake nature in this process and just plant things that will fill these niches, but it's plants that we want to have. And that way we can create kind of stable fields that will also feed us and that we don't have to weed so much anymore.
That's something to chew on, I think. What makes me think about is like what, you know, say in my own like small backyard, I'm also at my parents' house, in their small backyard or in somebody's, if you even have just like some small access to land, what would be like your recommendation of how they can benefit from permaculture themselves?
I think the main idea would be to understand a few things. The first one would be that naked soil is kind of like when you look at the body, kind of like an open wound or something that you have on your body, and it should be avoided, especially when you live somewhere where you have quite a bit of sunshine. Imagine you're laying on a beach, you have no sunscreen, you're laying naked on a beach, and the sun is burning down all day. And try to think how long you could enjoy that. And it's not very long. And that is why the soil itself, it's full of life. In a tablespoon of healthy soil, we have more microorganisms than there are people on the planet. So there's so much stuff going on. And that's also where all the nutrition comes from. It comes from all these microorganisms in the soil. And what we need to do is we need to protect them. So the first step would be to cover that soil. You can do that in many different ways. Some people use some kind of wood chips. Or what you can also do if you really want to set up what is often referred to as an instant garden, you just have whatever is growing there, you mow it down, you lay some cardboard on top, you can put some compost and then some wood mulch, and that way the soil is protected. And also because no more light can get through, also no weed seeds will germinate. And then through that layer, you could start planting the kind of plants that you want. So that is a very fast way how you could get started. Also personally, I'm really in love with trees and tree systems, because there what we can also create is kind of like a natural cover. So once we have a few trees growing, they will bring shade, but also their leaves, their branches. We can use them to protect and mulch the soil directly in place. So I would say that is kind of like the first step. And then there's also all these different kind of combinations of plants that can help each other. So I think many people might have heard about companion planting, and that's putting different plants in that grow well together and that don't interfere with each other. But we can also go a bit further than that. So we can plant, let's say we only have space for one tree. We could look at, let's take an avocado tree, for example. I think almost everyone loves avocados. And then you could look at different kind of plants that you would plant around it. So you create what is called a guild, or you could go even further and go for a polyculture. So that's different kind of plants that help each other. So we have plants that will attract beneficial insects, because we definitely want them as pollinators. We will also have some plants there that keep the kind of insects away that we don't want. So we have plants with a lot of smell, with a lot of colors, and they're kind of interfering with our insects that want to eat our plants, and then they get confused and they can't find them as easily as they would in a monoculture. Then we have different kind of plants that can bring nutrients into the ground. We need a lot of nitrogen. There are plants that are called nitrogen fixing. They are really, really fantastic. They work with different bacteria. And inside their roots, they actually build these small nodules. And inside these nodules, bacteria are living. And these bacteria have the ability to get nitrogen out of the air and then make it available for the plants. And in return, the plants are trading sugars that they get through photosynthesis, and they're living in symbiosis in the ground. So we will have some of these plants. We have other plants that have very deep roots. They can accumulate nutrients from deeper down in the soil. They will bring them to the surface, and that way we can create these things that are called polycultures. And that way we're kind of creating what would work in a natural ecosystem, but we're recreating it with plants that we want. And the good thing is, because we're filling all these gaps and we're also filling it in space, so there's no more space for different kind of weeds. So once these systems are set up and once they're working, our work as a gardener is mainly to harvest. And I think that is one of the very beautiful things about permaculture and permaculture design.
Wow. You have such a wealth of knowledge, my gosh. That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't know that actually as well. I knew, you know, the different plants were arranged in ways to help each other kind of what the term was have like a symbiotic relationship and help each other grow and do what they needed to do. But I just didn't realize it was, you know, of that level as well. And I think that's so cool that you can really, you know, learning that you can design and help them to mimic like a natural ecosystem, which is so cool.
Exactly.
I love that. So I have questions for you specifically. I guess, you know, our listeners don't really know your background much of like, how did you get started with permaculture? What was that like for you? What brought you to it?
I'm trying, because I was asked that before, and I'm not 100% sure what was that moment when I got really into it, but I think it's quite funny. The first thing I can really remember is I was at a friend's place, actually sitting on their toilet, and there was a book. They had a book on the toilet, and it was by Sepp Holzer, and it was his book of Sepp Holzer's permaculture, and I think I picked that up the first time, and I was like, wow, this is so different to everything I've seen before, and this is really impressive. So I got into that a bit more while I was still in university, and that's when I started researching it. And then I found so many resources, and yeah, I went down the rabbit hole, as you say, and I just got deeper into it and started reading more books about it, listening to podcasts, blog articles, everything. I consumed everything I could find on the topic, and I got really, really, yeah, deep into it while I was still studying at university. And then afterwards, because I studied in Amsterdam and the weather there was, well, usually raining, not the best weather, and so I wanted to go somewhere where it was a bit warmer just to celebrate being out of university. So I moved to the beautiful island of Tenerife on the Canary Islands. And first, when I arrived, I was working in a surf camp for a bit. The typical thing coming out of university and wanting to just have some fun. But I quickly realized that, you know, that's not enough. I needed something with more purpose and just, you know, being there for happy tourists for a while. I mean, it's a lot of fun. But I think a life that's just full of fun and without purpose is not really a fulfilling life. And that's when I started looking for places where I could really use all that theoretical knowledge that I had gained and gain some more practical knowledge. And then I found a place, a beautiful tiny little homestead on the island, and they were looking for someone to help them with a bit of woodwork and also permaculture. And I thought, whoa, that's exactly what I wanted. My grandpa, he was a woodworking teacher in school, and my dad also, as a little side thing, built some furniture, and I've always been into wood working. And so I came there, and then it was love at first sight. It's a fantastic little homestead in a very dry part of Tenerife. I think on average there we get around 10 days of rain every year.
Oh,
wow. Which is quite crazy, But it was perfect because, I mean, the world itself is getting warmer, it's getting drier, so it was the perfect place to learn.
To learn.
And then there we ended up building a pretty big treehouse with a bathroom and everything that I was living in, and on the same side working in the garden and, gaining more practical knowledge. So that's kind of where I got into it. And also there, because we had so many different volunteers coming through on the farm, that's when I realized I really enjoy also explaining them what we're doing on the farm and how things work. So I got a bit into the whole teaching and inspirational side. And also then I had a lot of friends and acquaintances through Instagram who actually wrote me messages, and they're like, oh, it's so nice, all the stories you're posting of all the stuff. I want to learn more. And that's kind of where that whole side picked up. And then I started giving workshops on Tenerife. So that was kind of picking up. And then I really fell in love with forests, and especially food forests. Mm-hmm. And it became kind of my goal to plant a food forest. But the problem was that on the farm where I was living, there was not really enough space to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking for a new place where I could do that. And then I found, another perfect match. It was a big farm. They had just purchased a lot of land, another 4,000 square meters. I don't know what that is in square feet. Sorry, here we're with our metric system. A lot of space, a few football fields.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for someone to help them plant a food forest. And that was the dream.
Wow.
So I came there, was basically presented with land that I could design. And then we spent 6 months there planting and just working and trying all these different techniques. And it was great because we could really use it also to educate. We had a lot of people coming to the farm to learn. And we just finished planting that during the pandemic. That was the good thing. We couldn't leave the farm. Spain was in a very, very strict lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically used those months to just work and plant. And that basically got me up to today.
Wow. That it must be amazing to work day in and day out with nature and you know, in nature and with plants. I feel like you must be you're just getting all the good energy constantly from working outside all the time.
Sure.
I just think about that. I'm like, man, that sounds so awesome to have a lifestyle like that. But also that's what a journey too. And also that it kind of just seems like it really just kind of fell into place one thing after another, you know. And what made you feel like, what made you so interested in permaculture itself? Like, what was the difference that really made you go, this is something I want to get into? And then after you got into it, what compels you to spread knowledge to other people?
What got me into it? I think it's this longing that I always had to make a positive impact. And the more I learned about the world and what's going on, the more I realized, okay, the biggest thing or the biggest threat to humanity is the climate crisis that is on the
mm-hmm.
horizon. And many people don't really realize how crucial it really is and how bad it can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you will only realize it once you're personally affected or once you don't have water for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, What I really love about permaculture compared to other things is that it's so holistic. It's really looking at everything, and it recognizes that everything on this planet is in some way or form connected. So whatever we do has an impact. All the products we consume, they are produced somewhere, they are sourced somewhere. When we throw them away, they end up somewhere. And it's really easy to live in our little bubble and only look at the things while we have them in our hands. But it's so much more important to really look at it from a bigger point and try to find out, okay, where do these products come from? Where do they go? Where does our food come from? What impact does it have? And all these things have such a huge impact. And what I believe is that permaculture is really there to look at everything, look at the whole value chain, look at the whole life of our food, of our products, of everything, with the aim of making it more sustainable and going further than that. Because also we talk a lot about sustainability, but I think sustainability is really not enough anymore. We have destroyed this planet so much. If we just sustain a destroyed planet, that won't do it anymore. We really need to regenerate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where permaculture came in, because it's Yeah, it really, for many people, they think permaculture is just about having a garden in a special way. But mm-hmm. it's really about the three ethics of people care, earth care, and future care. And I think that's really what attracted me to it, that it's so amazingly simple yet complicated, but it just it works. Everything, we want to really look at all the things we're doing and do them in a way that does not only have no negative impact on the environment, but actually a positive one, and that we can live as humans. And that's another another quote from Jeff Lawton, which I really love. It's, as humans, we can be the most destructive force on the planet, or we can be the most beneficial force. And I think that is another thing that I really love, because nature itself will always find a way to heal itself. You know, nature mm-hmm. doesn't really care much about if we're here as humans or not. Well, it would definitely be better if we're not here when we look at most of our actions. But when we use permaculture and we look at the world through a permaculture lens, then we can actually be so beneficial. And we can look at natural ecosystems that will sometimes take a lot of time to evolve. And we can support nature and speed that process up and basically give nature a little boost and make all these ecosystems that might have been degraded, and we can take them and bring them back into fruition. We can green deserts. We can basically do everything if we're creative enough. Mm-hmm. And this holistic approach of going from food over the houses we build, how we build them, the communities we live in, the way we do business, everything is part of permaculture. And I think that is really the main thing that fascinates me about it.
Yeah, definitely. What an interesting idea. I love that you said that I think we tend to associate ourselves. Now, we've been fed the narrative that humans are destructive, you know. But we could also, like that the quote that you said, we can also be, you know, what was the word that you used? It was like the most beneficial. Yeah, most beneficial. Yeah. And I really think that permaculture is unique in the way that it tells people, no, you can be beneficial to the earth and also still benefit yourself from, you know, benefit from this yourself. Because I feel like at the end of the day, that's what people want to know, is like, can I still benefit from this? Like, can I still survive off this sort of thing? But you know, what a flip in the narrative that we're told as well, is that we can completely rethink it and like rethink how we do things to kind of restructure how we do things well, you know, and that can follow into so many different areas of our lives. I wanted to ask you, we should probably hear a message from our sponsors really quick, and then I've got some questions for you after that. So we'll do that first.
Yeah, perfect.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together to change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
All right. So, more questions for Permanick. Let's see. So, Nick, what would you say is the biggest? What would you advocate for as the biggest way that permaculture can help with the climate crisis?
The biggest way. The biggest way would really be to restructure society completely. And it starts really with with people. You know, that's one thing that is often forgotten. And I think also many people make that mistake, that they are working so hard for their cause, may it be the environment, may it be social causes or other things, that they completely forget to look out for themselves. And, you know, they work so much and they work in such a way that they're really using their whole positivity until it's gone. And then they keep pushing and it leads to people being really frustrated, being burned out, and then not really having the positivity and energy that they would need for life. So I would advocate first that whatever you do, people should look out also for themselves and see that they can be happy, because as soon as you're happy, you can really have a much better impact on the world than when you're frustrated. And I think when we look out for people and we look at the whole side of people care that we have in permaculture, that would be the start. Really, we need to start looking out for each other again. So maybe with our closest, with our loved ones, but also with just strangers. And it's one thing that I started doing is just on the street, you know, saying hi to everyone in a positive way. And it can be that little glimpse of positivity that some people might need. And it's really what we're lacking today. We all live in our really closed bubbles. We live our closed lives. And it's all just interactions that are often just driven by, I want something now and I don't care where I get it from. And it's just, yeah, the love is missing. And I think that would be a really big part to look at the people again that are involved in everything. You know, may it be the people that you buy your products from, the people that you interact with, just everyone. I think the people aspect is the biggest. And then I think also looking at the way we source our products and how we produce things. So we need to really look at, okay, where does our food come from? How is it produced? How can it be that most things are so incredibly cheap? And then we will slowly realize that the way we are producing them only works because it's not sustainable. It's such huge, often efficient, like the systems are very efficient. And I mean, being German, I can't deny that I really like efficiency, but it comes at a very, very great cost that we need to look out for and that we should take into consideration. And then we really need to look out for future generations, you know, and for the planet and where it goes. Our actions have an impact, and we really decide every day, every decision we make can be either destructive to the planet or regenerative. And we really need to make sure that we look at our lives and how we want to live them, the decisions and the actions we make. We need to make sure that they are in a regenerative way. So I think this is the whole mindset idea of permaculture that has a big impact. And when we look at more direct, let's say practical things on a larger scale, I think the biggest thing would be agriculture. So the industrial agriculture that we see today, it is not sustainable and it won't work on the long run. We're losing topsoil. We are degrading our soils. We're polluting our waterways with too many pesticides, biocides, too many fertilizers, these things. So when we switch on a large scale, I think that is a very, very important step. And there, permaculture is one word that is used a lot, but also regenerative agriculture. I think that really brings a lot of value. And regenerative agriculture, some people use permaculture and regenerative agriculture kind of the same way, even though I would say regenerative agriculture is still a bit different. But there, you know, we would start in agriculture to have a cover on the soil. So we plant, we always have some crops that are there that are covering the soil. So we don't have this naked soil effect, so that the microorganisms are safe in the soil and we always cover it. And that way we can slowly also build more soil. And then we definitely need to stop tilling. The big plows that are going through the soil and that are moving it, they are destroying the whole network that is inside the soil. These microorganisms that are living there, they have all these fantastic soil food webs, is what it's called. They're all living there, they're moving in it, and that's how the nutrition is in the soil. Together with a lot of fungi, there's a whole network in the soil that is moving nutrients, that is moving water. which is another big, a very big topic. I won't get into it too much, but the soil food web and the mycelium in the soil, they are super important and they would get destroyed by tillage. So if we stop that, that would be another really important step. And then also we need to bring back diversity. These monocultures are incredibly efficient under the perfect conditions. And when the conditions are right, then you can get so much out of a monoculture field. The big problem is to achieve that, we really need to use a ton of fertilizer, a ton of pesticides, biocides. The conditions need to be just right. And basically that way we are producing these super bugs that become basically resistant to the chemicals we're using. And we have to put on so many fertilizers that are polluting so much in the soil, and they're bringing the whole balance that we would have in a normal ecosystem, they're bringing it out of balance. So we need to bring more diversity and plant different things together. Also, we need to move a lot more, in my opinion, to perennial crops. So basically, we have the main distinction between annual crops that are just there for up to a year or a few months, and then we have perennial crops that live for many years. And when we switch to systems that are applying more perennial crops, I think that's when we can really see more permanent systems. For example, trees, many of them produce fruits or nuts or these kind of things. When we integrate them into our systems, we can really get so much more out of it, and the system becomes better every year. And luckily also the roots grow further down, so they will reach groundwater. So that way we become more drought resilient. And basically integrating that. And then another big thing would be also to integrate livestock into these systems. We see a lot today, we see these big factory farms where animals are treated like shit, and it's just a very horrible industry. But when we look at ecosystems as a whole, there are no ecosystems on this planet that work without some kind of animal. There are always animals involved to really make ecosystems holistic and round in a way, to really close the gaps. And there are certain ways, one of called this, holistic grazing. It basically involves having animals on our farms that are grazing some parts of the field, and then they're rotating around. So they're only in some parts for a little while, and then they move. And that's how it used to be before humans came. We had big herds of different kind of animals, and because of predators and their search for food, they were always moving around. And that's super important. They're pooing everywhere, so that's great. That's bringing fertilizer. They're also eating the plants, which encourages them to regrow stronger. They're also trampling in some part of the leaves or of the organic matter, so that way it becomes more soil. And there are all these different practices that are actually building soil instead of depleting it. And I think that is one of the biggest steps that we need to do. So when we implement these trees, it's often called agroforestry. So basically a mix between agriculture and forestry, and regenerative agriculture, regenerative agroforestry. I think those techniques really hold the key to a more sustainable food production. And the great thing is many of these systems can really be applied on a large scale. You can really use them on big farms. It's small changes that need to happen, but when they happen, it's not like the whole farm needs to completely change everything overnight. It's something that can be implemented slowly over time, and that way we can make agriculture a regenerative force, and we can move agriculture from something that destroys soil to something that is actually regenerating soil. And I think that is a really crucial a crucial thing that we need. And if we don't do it, we will have very, very big problems in the future.
Yeah, and I like the idea too that it is something that you can implement over time. So I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, I have to change my whole system over to something new. And it's like, well, if you can, by piece, you know, change it over, then I think that's a bit less overwhelming for people too to try and change something about what they've been doing already, which is great. But again, so much wisdom in what you're saying. And it's great as well that it goes down to such a small scale that we can all individually connect to, as well as the large scale that we can all, you know, think about and contribute in the ways that we can to you know, changing things over or figuring out new ways to do things, or, you know, the ideals from permaculture and regenerative agriculture as well. I did want to ask you, so for anyone listening in right now, we are still in the COVID pandemic times, COVID-19 pandemic times, and a lot of, I'm here in America, and we're definitely going in and out of lockdown as well, and it's a whole thing still and here in July. But I was curious of how your focus or what your main focus was like pre-COVID and now, that we're here about 6 to 8 months in, how has that changed or has it changed for you or the way you look at things or connect with people?
I think it's on the one hand, my life didn't change too much, because before COVID, I was working on a farm and we're being not fully self-sufficient, but working towards that. And during the pandemic, that didn't really change too much. So our daily lives weren't influenced that much. But that is also exactly what motivated me to really push a lot more and go a lot more into the whole side of inspiring and educating others.
Mm-hmm.
Because many more people could be in that situation. And if we would have a lot more small farms, a lot more localized food production, then I think many of the problems that we're seeing today wouldn't have happened. And that's really why during the pandemic, I really started putting out a lot more content, trying to put out much more value for people, engaging much more with people to really show them that, look, there is another way. We can live our 9-to-5 lives in our hedonic treadmills and just work to have money to live in, in flats that we don't really like, to buy things we don't really need. That's one side. But why don't we spend our time before retirement and use it for something that we actually care about and something that we're really passionate about? And I talked to so many people during the pandemic, and I've never seen more people start small balcony gardens, start growing their first plants. And that was really a big motivator for me. So that's also why I want to do a lot more online work of just supporting people, offering courses, offering just basically Q&A sessions. And really that motivated me to double down on the whole teaching side of permaculture and really inspiring others. Because I think the biggest change that we could make is moving much more to these decentralized systems. And when we look at when we look at the pandemic, many people are losing their jobs. Many people don't know where to get food from. But what if we get together in many small local groups, and if some people together start a little community garden, it can be a rooftop garden, it can be a small community garden, just something like that, where they start growing their own food. That's the way how people can learn, how they can reconnect with nature. They can feed themselves. If it works out and if they actually gain enough experience, then they can also start selling a bit to their neighbors. That way they can also make some money. So basically, now we have created jobs that bring happiness, that bring food, and that bring health to the people. And I think, a lot in the US, we see a lot of problems with unhealthy people. It's that we have many reports of obesity, all these kind of things that come from highly processed foods with a lot of sugar. And when you grow your own food, it's so incredibly rewarding, and it also it tastes so much better. So I have the hope that more people will realize, hey, I have a lot of time now because I lost my job. here we have a little bit of land in front of our house that is only some lawn at the moment. And they can say, hey, let's transform that into a little garden. They probably have some neighbors who want to help out. And I think that is the big thing that I also want to support, is these people who can grow their own food, who can inspire others. We can get kids into it, that from a young age they learn where food actually comes from, how to grow healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I want to support. And also during the pandemic, at the moment we are building an organization, we are building a startup, because we always talk about carbon as kind of a bad thing in the atmosphere. But carbon is actually the building block of all life. And in a good soil, we need a lot of carbon. And a good soil can also store so much more carbon than the biomass above ground. So at the moment, we're building the startup to give people a chance to basically offset the carbon that they have produced to be more sustainable. And instead of just using this offset in any random way, we are using it to support regenerative farmers who are using these regenerative practices that I talked about earlier to not only store carbon in the soil, but to also use that to grow more sustainable and regenerative food. And that is also something through the pandemic that we have really doubled down on, and we're building it. We're almost ready to launch it. And that way we can also bridge that gap. And people who say they want to live more sustainable and they produce too much CO2 at the moment, they could use it to really get kind of rid of that and support these farmers in their regenerative practices. And I think that's the main thing for me, is really this whole educating people, giving people a chance to show that a regenerative life is possible. Regenerative practices are out there. We can support them, and showing people a way to start. You know, you don't need to change your whole life overnight, but you can start with a small little plant. You can start with a little pot and then move from there maybe to a community garden, to a bigger farm, or just the way you throw out your waste. Start a little compost. The easiest way to start a little worm compost in your flat. You can do that easily. And yeah, I think COVID is really for us, it's the wake-up call that we needed to be reminded again that we are part of nature and that we have a responsibility as part of nature to be the most beneficial force on the planet and to stop destroying everything. I think that's what COVID really taught me.
Definitely. Wow. Yes. I can say, hear, hear. I agree. That's a wonderful thing that you're talking about as well, of just starting, getting yourself your first plant, getting your, you know, taking baby steps and starting to incorporate a new way of living. And, you know, I even thought about, wow, what if, you know, my parents, if they did decide to start a garden in their backyard, to put out a sign in the front yard and say, hey, do you want some free produce? Like, want to come help us with our garden? You know, something along those lines of getting your neighbors involved as well. And that being the start of people learning more and more. And that's how you spread the knowledge of how to support yourself and to be, you know, not only self-reliant, but also, like you said, regenerating and benefiting nature itself too. I did want to ask you, basically one of the things before we go. One was, I know you mentioned you are involved in a startup. I don't know that if you can talk about that or not, or tell us what you're involved in now, and basically how, if we want to get involved with you or support you in any way, what myself and the listeners can do as well.
The startup is not, we're not quite launched yet. It's called Climate Farmers, and it will, if everything goes to plan, sometime in August or September we will go online. But until then, the easiest would be for people to basically just follow our journey. So it's on Instagram, that would be Permanic Permaculture, or on Twitter also Permanic. So when you put Permanic and Permaculture, you should find me. And for me, the main thing is also I'm slowly building a YouTube channel to put out more knowledge, to show people. That for me is the main thing. I want to inspire people. I want to show people these practices, and I just want to get people into permaculture and show them that there is another way. And we also have a new project on the horizon, which is not official yet, but I can give a little hint. We have a plan of rebuilding an abandoned village into a little permaculture paradise and eco village, which I will also announce officially soon. And that will be a really amazing project, because it's finally our own little dream that we're making a reality. And that's also the place we want to use to inspire others, to let people come over to learn, for workshops, seminars, retreats, really spread more of these practices.
Wow. Yes, I love that. And I think people will be able to watch along the way, especially if you're able to record any of it and put it on YouTube for the world to see. I think that sounds awesome. And for anybody who's listening, if you did want to connect with Nick or Permanic, all of his information is in the description below, all of his social media, his website, all the things. And I definitely recommend giving him a follow, because that's why he's even here today. How I came across him is kind of actually a friend of mine who is turkey permaculture classes right now shared one post, and then I was, oh, I'll share. Here we are, which is great. Nick, thank you so much for all of your insight today that you've shared with us. I really appreciate your time. All of your wonderful knowledge. I feel like I'm excited that I'm taking steps back into learning about it again after such a long time of neglecting my interest in it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I think that that's maybe something people tend to forget, that, you know, everyone is hating on social media as something evil. But social media is just a tool, and we are social media, you know, and that's how we found each other. And we all decide with every post, with everything we do online, we get to make the decision.
Oh no, it's like he's dropped. Perhaps he will hop back on. He was on such a good note there. So if anybody who's listening, it looks like his call from Germany did drop. But if he's back, I'll finish it up. While he is getting back connected again, I will say if anybody is listening and would like to share their own business through this podcast, I would love to have you as a sponsor. Feel free to contact me through my website, which is www.anna.com. You can reach out, let me know about it, and we can start working together. And I also want to thank everybody who has been listening to this podcast last week. Y'all make my heart go round, and I wouldn't be here if you weren't still listening, or maybe I would, talking to nobody, but it makes it much better to have this wonderful community support and learning all together, and also grounding too. So let's see if he gets back on. I'm going to give a couple more minutes. Here he is. Okay, great.
Internet strikes again.
Oh, Nick, we almost lost you. You were in such the middle of such a great sentence about social media.
Yeah, basically, I'm just saying we are social media, and we get to decide what kind of content we want to put out. So you can put out something that is valuable to others, that inspires others, or you can be very destructive and just write hate comments and all that. So I think people need to really step back on the whole side of saying that social media itself is bad. We are social media, and we can use it to spread so much positivity, to spread so much knowledge, and to spread these practices that can really regenerate the planet.
Yes. Woo! Can you get a round of applause? That's wonderful. And you really are the I think you're a great model of that as well. Like, just showing, you know, seeing what you put out, every single post is filled with knowledge and inspiration and joy and connected. You can actually really connect with your audience as well, which I think is just like an awesome thing to do in practice, which is a great use of social media. So everybody, I think we can take some inspiration from that as well. All right, Nick, I think that's it for us. How do you feel? Is there any thoughts you want to say?
No, just feeling great. Thank you so much for reaching out. And yeah, I just feel even more inspired to put out even more content and inspire more people to do great regenerative stuff.
Good. Yes, we're here for it. We want to know. I hope this episode as well will help my listeners get an interest as well. We're going to loop them in. All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I really, really appreciate all of your listens, all of your comments. Please let me know what you think about this. If you have any questions, let me know. And I'm wishing you all rest, joy, and good old inspiration this week. So please do stay vigilant and stay safe. And thank you again. And Nick, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.